Hello, Ryerson, and welcome to Ryersonian This Week, your weekly audio broadcast on campus news and stories that affect Ryerson students. I'm Michael Delamonte.
And I'm Justin Chandler. Together with Ricardo Serrano and the rest of the Ryersonian team, we'll be bringing you the news you need to know. In this week's episode, you'll hear about mysterious ads on the TTC, the diversity of Ryerson's student population, and the SLC's failing grade. Now on to the news.
The Ontario College strike continues, with about 500,000 Ontario students unable to attend class. Negotiations between college faculty and administration resumed yesterday, but an end to the strike is not yet in sight. Nicole Baker is a third year in the collaborative nursing program at George Brown. Baker says that some students are upset by the disruption to their semester, but she's sympathetic to the strike's cause.
I know a lot of us are like, you know, think of the students, you know, we're being put at a disadvantage. Yes, but it's stemming from a larger structural issue where it's just working conditions are really poor and it's affecting everybody at every level.
A key demand from the striking Ontario Public Sector Employees Union is for colleges to match the number of total full-time faculty with contract workers.
November is Trans Awareness Month at Ryerson. Lori Stewart, the chair of Positive Space at Ryerson, told the Ryersonian her organization is proud to expand the ceremony to 1 month. It used to be 1 day. Positive Space will host workshops and panels on inclusion and supporting trans people. Cameron Harlick, VP Equity at the RSU, said they're concerned Ryerson's trans collective was not involved in planning. Harlick identifies as two-spirit and transmasculine. They said they will not attend Trans Awareness Month events. Stewart said Positive Space reached out to Ryerson employees who identify as queer for opinion and participation.
Commuters have been noticing a peculiar ad on the TTC this week. Hawkins Power and Light, the insidious research center from the smash hit Netflix series Stranger Things, is advertising on subway trains. A number is listed on the ad, which you can actually call. Here's what the not-so-friendly folks from Hawkins Power and Light have to say.
Hello, you've reached Hawkins Power and Light, powering a brighter tomorrow in the community of Hawkins and beyond. I'm Dr. Sam Owens, and my goal is to improve how we light and power the world.
This isn't the first time Netflix has used phones in the TTC network to promote the show. Last year, several phone booths were set up in subway stations, prompting transit users to pick up and hear a creepy message.
Ward 27 counselor Kristen Wong Tam is advising Ryerson students to be on alert. 11 crime-related incidents were reported in the Church Young corridor over the course of a week in October, prompting Wong Tam's statement. The counselor says Ryerson students need to make sure they watch where they're going. In response to the uptick in violent incidents, 51 Division is stationing 4 neighborhood officers in the Church Wellesley area. For more, check out Nikhil Sharma's piece on ryersonian.ca. Now let's pass it off to Ricardo with some student body news.
Last week, a group of graduate students organized a town hall meeting at Ryerson to talk about creating an independent graduate student union. The idea has long been debated on campus, but current Ryerson electoral laws prevent its existence. I spoke to Peter Hastrup, a Ryerson sociology PhD student who came up with the initiative of having a grad student union, and this is what he had to say.
We'll be looking at more funding for graduate students. We'll be looking at having symposiums, emergency funds, trying to improve our healthcare.
Hastrup said, in order to achieve this, the proposal has to be approved through 2 different referendums, one by the RSU, the other by the School Board of Governors. He's also proposing changing the electoral rules that regulate referendums at the RSU.
The first step for us trying to get the RSU bylaws changed from having referendums to be done by paper ballots to making it an online process.
Hastrup also said that currently grad students receive far less money through the RSU than the amount they pay through the RSU fees.
With this year's budget, RSU gave us about $89,000 for the year. Based on our calculations from what graduate students pay into the RSU's fund, we pay almost $300,000. So we're hoping that we'll have probably a bigger budget.
But referendums alone won't usher in graduate students' union. Under the guidelines, at least 10% of all Ryerson students need to vote, with at least 51% voting in favor. Hastrup is now calling on undergraduates to participate in January's referendum.
We are pleading with the undergraduate students to see where we are coming from and to understand that undergraduate students does not have the same troubles that the graduate students will have. So they should come help us and vote in support of we exiting the RSU.
If they're able to jump through all of the hoops, Hastrup says grad students could have their own union by late 2018. This week, Ryerson's Equity and Community Inclusion Office launched a survey to examine just how diverse Ryerson's student body is. The survey asks students questions about their race, family background, gender, sexual orientation, and education. The questionnaire was sent via email to students, though filling it out is optional. Tamar Myers, one of the directors of the Equity and Community Inclusion Office, says that the survey aims to find out whether or not minority groups are proportionally represented at Ryerson.
The Office of the Vice President, Equity and Community Inclusion, developed the Student Diversity Self-ID to get a clearer picture of who's here and who's not at the university and in different programs. We want a report on the representation of students in equity-seeking groups to identify and remove systemic barriers and make the university more accessible and inclusive.
This initiative comes a week after the release of the 2016 census, which showed that more than half of Torontonians identify themselves as visible minorities. Ryerson Students Union Vice President of Equity, Cambrin Harlick, says that there is still a lot to overcome when it comes to diversity at Ryerson's faculty members and staff.
I think we should be hiring professors that look like the students in their classroom, right? I have taken multiple classes now where we've had lectures on race and ethnicity, or even race and ethnicity courses that are taught by white folks, for example.
A study run by Ryerson's Diversity Institute found that in the education sector, which includes school board directors and leaders of universities and colleges, only 41% of the leadership is composed of women and 19.6% of racialized minorities. Myers says that having a diverse faculty could help improve Ryerson students' learning experience.
Diversity has been shown to improve learning and the educational experience for all students. Also, students learn more when we look at subject matter from diverse perspectives and experiences.
The survey is expected to be made public by the end of next year. For Ryerson News, I am Ricardo Serrano.
Now on to the interview portion of our show. Some Ryerson students spend as much money on their fourth-year practicum projects as they do on their tuition. In the RTA School of Media, students make films with budgets that can reach five figures. When they don't have the money they need, many turn to crowdfunding websites like Indiegogo. But crowdfunding isn't always enough. Heather Stewart, features editor at the Ryersonian, wrote about the situation this week. She joined me in studio. So Heather, did you talk to anyone who had a particularly high-budget project?
Yeah, so there was one group. They're creating a short indie film called Foxy, and I spoke to Alice Poloico, who is one of the producers, and she's also in charge of their budgeting, and they have a $10,000 budget for their project.
And is that normal?
Generally, from what I understand, it's sort of this unspoken thing that each group member will contribute $500 of their own money, and then on top of that, they try to fundraise the rest. So generally, it's between $5,000 and $10,000 for each group. And I spoke to Richard Grunberg, who is one of the RTA professors and advisors for the practicum projects, and he said that it's actually declined by thousands of dollars in the last few years, and it's still that high.
Is this something that just really keen students are doing, or is this something that everybody feels pressured to do and it's sort of necessary to succeed?
I think it's one of those things that they probably feel pressure just given that everyone in their group is contributing. So if they weren't to give up that money as well, it would be essentially like you're the slack off in the group, but not only that, you're not helping at all to give money, which they need for the project. So from what I understand, they feel pressure.
And do the people that you spoke to think that all of this is fair?
There was sort of mixed emotions about it. I spoke to one girl, Kara Pamonti, who's working on a web series called Hobbyists. And she said that it definitely is good because it prepares them for real life, because if they weren't using Ryerson resources like camera equipment and things like that, it would be a lot more. So it's good because they're able to practice their craft. At the same time, they said it's so stressful because they had no idea coming into first year that their final assignment was going to cost this much on top of tuition.
Yeah, and you mentioned the equipment and Ryerson helping bring the cost down with that. Other than that, though, is there anything that Ryerson is doing or anything that the RTA program might be trying to do to bring costs down for students otherwise?
So one thing that they've done is there's a casting agency that they've connected students with. So that way, if they are making something that's fictional and they need actors for it, they all can resource from the same pool of actors. And that's helpful to them because that in itself can definitely tell you the difference between a good quality movie and a bad. It's just the acting itself can make or break it. They used to have to pay insurance. That was about $2,000 for each person just to rent the equipment. And they've now made it so that way it's $15 for each student, which is obviously a big difference. He said at the end of the day, this is Richard Grunberg told me this, there's not much more they can do because they're already giving them essentially all the tools that they need. And it just is up to them to figure out things like costuming and sets. But depending on what their project is, it can be more or less expensive. Yeah.
Heather Stewart, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you.
Even though it's only 3 years old, Ryerson's Student Learning Center received a failing grade for accessibility. Graded by the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance, the SLC was found to have serious accessibility problems. But what is it that makes the SLC so inaccessible? Ryersonian reporter Julie Doe spoke to the AODA Alliance and Ryerson students for their thoughts on the SLC's accessibility issue. She joins us now. Welcome, Julie.
Hi.
So what are the major problems with the SLC?
So the major problems that were kind of mentioned when I was out on the field reporting were ramps and inaccessible elevators, them being too slow, and poles being in the middle of staircases. Just small things like that that kind of accumulated.
Okay. And you actually spoke to a student who uses a power wheelchair, Matt Vecino. What was his biggest complaint about the SLC?
So his biggest complaint had to do with elevators being too slow. Here's a clip of him.
Probably the biggest issue with the SLC, which I'm sure a lot of people have, is the elevators. As much as there are four, you can wait up to 35 minutes for an elevator. I've been stuck on the top floor and had to wait 20 minutes, missed the start of an exam because just they're too busy and people are inconsiderate and don't think about taking the stairs.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Was he late for his exam? Did students not get out of the elevator for him?
So based off of what he was telling me during that interview, he said that he was late. People weren't really like moving out of the way in the elevators to let him through. They were just being inconsiderate. And he said that they were so packed that people couldn't really afford to get out. Once they get in, it's like it's go time. You really don't want to lose your spot.
Yeah, definitely. And this is the elevator an issue kind of heard from other students as well?
Yeah, it's a widespread thing that I heard the whole time that I was interviewing students, whether or not they had any physical disability issues. It's just really, really slow. And even though there are four, it takes so long to get into one. People will usually opt to take the stairs from the first all the way up to the eighth floor sometimes because they don't want to have to deal with the wait.
Yeah, no, it's definitely annoying. And a lot of people think of accessibility in terms of physical issues, like being in a wheelchair or crutches. But how does the SLC treat students who have something like a visual impairment?
So they've said that they have employees out with their welcome desk. They're roaming about on every floor on the lookout for people who might have visual impairments and stuff like that. And the minute they see them, they're there to help them, walk them through to where they might need to be. And they said it's an ongoing thing that they try to improve on all the time with student feedback.
Okay. And well, I mean, given this failing grade, what can the SLC do to improve this?
I think really like take some of the feedback they've been hearing and escalate what they've been doing. Like they've done a good job from what I've been hearing and what I've seen as well, because I have seen SLC employees walking around and like cleaning up the ramps and stuff, moving people out of the way. But really like being on the lookout more often, because sometimes it's just one employee walking around for like an hour or something. And sometimes you don't see and you can't see people with visual impairments or other disabilities right away. You really have to be on the lookout. If it's crowded, you need more staff on hand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us, Julie. For more on this topic, you can check out Julie's piece at ryersonian.ca.
And that's our show for this Friday, November 3rd. For Ryerson-related news, be sure to head to ryersonian.ca and follow us on social media. Like every week, this newscast will also be available online as a podcast. You can listen at your leisure by subscribing to us on iTunes and Google Play. A special thanks to the Ryersonian reporters who made this newscast possible, Angela Glover, the RSJ's fantastic production team, and our guests. I'm Justin Chandler.
And I'm Michael Dallamonte. And on behalf of the Ryersonian team, thanks for listening.